Let's get started into this. I had a few other comments that I wouldn't mind making, but there's no point in it, really. I mean, what's going to happen is going to happen. But have you really thought much about it? The fact that when the Antichrist shows up, he's going to deceive people with words, and they're going to willingly accept anything he says without any proof, without any evidence. And over there in Daniel, it talks about the guy that's helping him out going to be a raiser of taxes. Of course, not just in America, that's happening everywhere. You know, it's how governments function. But he's going to deceive them with kind words, fair speeches, and flatteries, and it's going to be the hearts of the simple. And you know, that's not just in America. What's going on is taking place worldwide. That kind of mentality is taking place worldwide. And so what God does is he just simply blinds these people to where they'll accept it. I mean, I used to think there'd have to be some cataclysmic event that would take place that would make Americans suffer so much they would accept the Antichrist, you know, to run the country. Well, anymore, I'm just convinced that, boy, this whole thing revolves around God blinding their hearts, and their love of their money and self and greed and everything else will influence their decisions if it ever gets down to that level. But it's a strange, strange year. Strangest in my lifetime, I can tell you that. Brother Selden's nodding, and he's older than I am. This is God's doing, and it's marvelous in our eyes. All right, well, let's talk about something God made for a change again here instead of all this other nonsense. We're going to talk about a beaver this morning. Go back over to Psalms 145, read those couple verses again. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised, and his greatness is unsearchable. One generation shall praise thy works to another and shall declare thy mighty acts. What kind of mighty acts? Well, one of them we're going to look at this morning is, and God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. Verse 31, it says, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So what's that got to do with anything? Let me tell you something. If God says about what he made, it was very good, you better believe it was very good. You say, what happened to it? Well, Adam, that guy, him and Eve messed this thing up. But you can still see the results of God's handiwork, even though it's not in perfection. You say, how come you know it's not in perfection? Well, we're going to talk about a beaver this morning for a few minutes. By the way, I did hear great things about your lesson last week, Brother Selden. If you guys aren't getting some of these sermons that touch your heart, you're really missing out on a blessing. Because if they touch your heart at that time, you can listen to them a month, 2 months, 3 months later, and they will touch your heart again. And if you don't get these things, you know, you're just messing up. You buy movies because you like them, and you'll go back and watch them again and again. Some people do. My wife and I do. We'll pick up the good ones, you know, and watch them again and again. Well, if you do that with movies and you pay money for it, why don't you go back here and get some of these things for free that would turn your heart toward your Creator? Do you know why we're here, right? You know why we're here. You know why God made us, right? Well, what have you done about it this last week? What do you mean? Okay, what have you done this last week to bring God pure pleasure with that intent? What have you done this last week to bring him glory with that intent? I mean, I don't see too many hands. I mean, there are probably some out there that did it, but I can tell you this, he says, whatsoever you do in word and deed, do all to the glory of God. I guarantee you, I ate and drank a whole bunch of times this week with no more than a sense of gratitude for it. And that's not what he said. He said, if it's received with thanksgiving, that's one thing, but that's totally different than doing it to the glory of God. That implies intent and effort on our part. Anyway, what about this beaver? Well, we live on a lake. And we moved into that place about 30 years ago, and these beaver run up and down that lake, and they've been doing it for 30 years. Like I told you one time, they got that willow tree and hauled that thing off. I couldn't believe they could carry that thing off. I could not believe it. You know, I could understand them cutting it down and taking some branches off it and leaving the trunk there. They took the whole thing. It was gone. Every scrap of it was gone. Well, they use that bark for food. And I don't know if that beaver would tear up stuff like that, like God designed him to do, if he'd tear that kind of stuff up, if Adam hadn't sinned. And I don't know exactly what kind of a world we'd be living in. I know this, that the aggressive animals and creation and nature wouldn't be attacking mankind and killing each other off. Because when he shows up in the millennium, the lion and the lamb and the kid's going to play on the cockatrice's den, which is a poisonous snake, and nobody's going to get hurt. Not only that, the child will die at 100 years old. So people are going to die, but they'll still be considered a child at 100. Well, that sounds like back in there with Methuselah, doesn't it? You get a kid 9 years old, don't you think he's a child? Well, if you live 900 years and you die at 100, wouldn't you still be considered a child? I guarantee if I was 700 years old, I'd think a 100-year-old kid was just a kid. Anyway, moving along here. This old beaver gave us all kinds of trouble. We had all kinds of experiences. We'd watch him swim back and forth up and down that lake in the evening, in the morning, in the middle of the night. And there was one time I was out there in that gazebo we built out over the water, similar to Brother Jack's, but not near as big or as nice. I was out there in that thing, and it was late, late, late. It was about midnight. I walked out there for some reason, was just out there in the dark, just enjoying myself. And I went to look over there and move a little bit. And man, I hear this thing, wham, scared me half to death. And the only thing I can describe is it'd be like a piece of concrete about that big somebody threw out in that water. And boy, it slapped that water. Scared me half to death. Scared that beaver when I moved, the vibration he felt in that gazebo legs and stuff scared him. So he slapped that water with his tail. The Lord just laughed. I said, I got you. He said, maybe I got both of them. I don't know. Maybe that beaver was as scared as I was. I don't have a clue. But anyway, that beaver's a real character. He's a dam builder. He builds his house in the water. He does all kinds of things, but his dam building skills are really interesting. They study these things in college, the engineering classes and stuff. They study that beaver. You know how that beaver can build that dam and keep that thing from falling apart? Because he builds it with intelligence. Where'd he get it? He got it from his creator. That guy can go out there and build a dam, and you can have big old monstrous floodwaters wash over that thing, and it's just there when the water goes back down. He shoves sticks down into that ground, pointed this way, and then starts building everything on it. The more pressure on that dam, the more it digs into that ground. That's amazing the way they do it. They'll build that thing into an arc so it builds pressure against it, you know. They go out there and study that stuff and say, here's the way to build a dam, boys. You say, do they build them like that? No, they build them out of concrete, but they use a lot of the ingenuity that God put in that beaver. And that rascal's kind of peculiar because he lives primarily in water. He stores his food underwater, which is mostly, you know, the bark on trees and stuff like that. God made him real special, gave him all kinds of provisions for doing that. One of them was webbed feet. Another one is he's got special teeth. When I shot that one I told you about, that's 56 pounds. I pulled that rascal's lower chin down where those teeth come up and two teeth down here like this that he cuts those trees down with. I could see over 2.5 inches of them. And they go clear on back around. They grow back out like that and they come all the way up. I said, I'm glad I didn't get him alive. I've been bit by a squirrel. You talk about being bit, man, you get bit by one of those rascals, you are bit. But anyway, he's got special teeth for cutting down trees and he lives a lot of time in really cold, cold water. Now this guy's a mammal. He runs around in this ice-cold water. God fixed him so he could get in that cold water without freezing to death. One of the first things he did was he gave him clear eyelids, like little goggles. So when the water gets real cold or real yucky or dirty or something, he closes that one set of eyelids. So he runs around like he's got goggles on underneath the water so he can still see clear. He's also got nose flaps and gets down under there. You ever go in a swimming pool and get water up your nose? Oh, man. Well, that character's swimming around out there in swift streams, hauling limbs across. And by the way, he can go straight across a stream no matter what the current's like. He'll take a big old branch and haul that thing straight across. One guy says, he knows how to make mathematical calculations. Well, I guess indirectly you do. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have any idea what your brain has to go through just to drive your car? My, oh, my. They're talking about billions of calculations per second. Who made that thing? Somebody greater than we are, and his greatness is unsearchable. Anyway, so he's got these nose flaps. He's also got ear flaps, keep the water out of his ears so he don't get swimmer's ear. But in addition to that, he's got these fur-lined flaps behind his teeth close off his throat and cover his molars, fur-lined. So that that rascal can go out there and do all this work in that ice-cold water and still stay warm, his teeth and his back of his throat and everything else stay warm too. Where'd he get all this? God says, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind. You know what after his kind is? That's that whole DNA chain. That's where all that stuff is passed on, uncorrupted from one generation to the next. Since Adam sinned, you know, there has been no major changes in that beaver. From that time on, same thing, over and over and over and over and over and over. Keep on going for thousands of years without making any mistakes. Who taught them? Where do they go? Beaver Dam School? Mom and Dad teach them? No. I had a neighbor next door to me. His name was Paul Hamilton. He was a biology professor up at UWF. After I shot that rascal, he told me, he said, it won't do you any good. I said, why not? He said, because if you take the beaver out of this lake, the very next spring, those pups will come swimming back in from either upstream or downstream looking for a new home. And the minute they find out there isn't anybody here, they're going to move right in. He said, they'll do it every single year. He said, you're going to have beaver in here no matter what you do. I said, okay, I give up. I'm not going to plant any more willows, and I'll put fencing around the ones that are by the water, which we've done. We got a bald cypress, and they cut that thing down twice before I defeated them finally. Even at that, one of them pushed the thing up, nibbled a little bit on the bottom. Why do they like that? They know what kind of trees will last underwater. They know the ones that taste good. They know the ones they can put underwater and will stay there for a long time. You're not going to find them getting old junk trees, you know, like these popcorn trees. Why? There's nothing to them. They'll rot out too quick. They get the right stuff and the right size. Anyway, those rascals live in this house with two ways in, two ways out, and maintain a temperature and a safety area in there. You see that stuff and you realize the genius behind that one simple creature. And there's another one that's similar to him called the duck-billed platypus. Now, this guy is a character. He's got web feet. He lives primarily underwater, but his food is shrimp. Now, this guy's got eyelids that close to keep the water out of his eyes, and that's what he does. When he goes underwater, he closes his eyes. He's also got nose flaps. He closes his nose flaps. You know how he finds his food? God gave this rascal a little sensor so that when the shrimp that he's looking for flicks that tail, he can detect that electrical impulse and go find it. And why'd God make all these things different? Because he's a God of variety. Why did he do those things? So that we'd look into him and realize his genius, his creative ability, begin to understand beyond ourselves that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Why did he do it? For his glory. And if it doesn't bring him glory, if all it does is just fascinate you and you learn about it and you go, oh, look what I found out, then you've missed the whole point. It's like the guy looking at the artwork saying, oh my goodness, what a beautiful painting, instead of saying, my oh my, what a talented artist. When you see those creatures like that, your dogs and your cats that you interact with, they should remind you of the same one that made you, and they should stir your heart toward him. Let's talk about a little creature that showed up here a few years back, and I'd never seen many of them before, and all of a sudden, one year, I killed 175 of them at my place. I don't know how many you got. I counted them. I mean, all of a sudden, we just started seeing these things we'd never seen before show up at our place. And it's just one of those kind of critters that I don't care anything about. You say, what is it? It's called a black and yellow garden spider. People call them banana spiders around here. And some other people, they call them zipper spiders because they got a little old thing in the middle. Looks like a zipper right in the center of their web. You know where they came from? They came in on the wind. That's how they got here. That's how God transport those. And they won't hurt you. I mean, they're pretty much benign. But they'll make you hurt yourself. I mean, I guarantee you, you go walking through the woods or something about there at dusk, and all of a sudden one of them things just right there on your face. And you'll be killing yourself going into reverse. I can't imagine anything much worse than walking one of those things while it's really dark and feeling this thing grab a hold of your face and then start scurrying around. I'm just not a spider lover, you know. Those things get about 2.5 inches. I shot one of them with a pellet gun up in the tree. They get way up there. The bigger they get, the higher they go. You notice that? I shot one of them rascals with my pellet pistol and the thing goes whack. I said, my goodness, boy, that thing's tough. They are tough. They got a really hard shell. I don't know if you noticed it, but those are only the females. The big ones are the females. The little male spider on that web, you can barely see him. He's a tiny little old thing. So what's so unusual about that garden spider? Well, to start with, God made that thing to be able to spin 7 different kinds of webs. 7 again. Man, Lord, you sure made some creepy things. Yeah, I called them those things that creep upon the earth, you know. So when did he make them? He made them the 6th day. He made the beasts and he made the creeping things on the earth. And then he finally got around to us and said, well, let's make man after our image. But those things creeping around out there, the cockroaches and the ants and all that other stuff. I mean, they say there's more ants on the planet than there are people. I believe that. You stop and think about how many different kinds of insects there are. God says, I like this stuff. When he got all done with it, he said, that's very good. Whether we like it or not, he does. I was looking through some of my notes this morning, some things that I've jotted down in the past. And, you know, we can't say this too much. You know, what's important to you isn't all that important. It's only important if it's important to God. You know how many things are important to you that aren't important to God? A bunch. He says, your ways are not my ways. And if you really studied God, you'd begin to understand what he meant by that was not just that, well, you and I are different. We just kind of think different. No, we are different. I got a deceitful heart that's desperately wicked. He doesn't. He's not like that. My purpose in life is just to enjoy everything. Be happy, you know, that's what I want. God says, hey, I'm long-suffering. Well, hey, let's just cut the suffering part out of there. Let's get rid of that. God says, you just don't understand. I think a lot of times we're like the little kid in grade school or something that's got to go to school the next day, you know, and some kid was picking on him the day before and he's scared half to death that this kid's going to pick on him the next day. He's got a test he's got to take and he's afraid to take it because he can't memorize his spelling words or something. You know, we look at it as a parent and say, well, don't worry too much about it. Just do your best. Oh, yeah, but it's really hard, you know. It's not hard. Our life on this planet is just for a moment. It's just a vapor that appears for a little while and passes away, you know? That's what it's like. God looks at that thing like we look at little children worrying about some insignificant problem when they're 5 and 6 years old. It's just going to pass away, and then everything's going to get better. But anyway, he made this thing, 7 kinds of webs. Now, Brother Jim and I, a while back, we were running around off-road on those motorcycles. We went down some dirt roads, and we ran into them things. They were everywhere. After you see one of them stretched across from tree to tree in front of you, you start running slower, and you start looking for webs. I mean, can you imagine flying down through that thing at dusk, and before you realize it, you got about 15 of them on you? You know, whack, 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 and the webs are hanging all over you. You talk about a Halloween nightmare. But anyway, they got one kind of web God gave them. It's non-sticky web. That thing is like the highway on their web system. Then they got another part of that web that is sticky where it catches their prey. Then after they catch this prey, they can spin out big sheets of web and roll that thing up in these sheets of webs. You say, where did he get all this stuff from? It's what God made. He said, study this stuff. My greatness is unsearchable. You know, when I make something and I say it's very good, then you ought to be able to go back and tie that back into the glory of God and praising God and study those things because those demonstrate the one that we're going to live with forever. Those are parts of him. You know, part of you is the things that you do, the things that you like, the things that you enjoy. Well, these are things that God does that he enjoys doing. He likes making stuff and he likes that variety. Not only that, when that spider lays those eggs, it makes this little cocoon of webs, and there's about 3 or 4 different kinds of webs in it, and the last one's even a darker color, so it can control color, it can control the type of web. That thing's got a factory inside of it to be able to do so much more stuff than they're doing up at Monsanto, you can't believe it. Well, not Monsanto anymore. With Kim Strand, Monsanto, Sterling Fibers, Solutia, and all the rest of those places. He spins this stuff out. I don't know if you know it, but during the Second World War, they were using Black Widow spider webs in gun sights. Because those things were so strong. We used to live out there in California, and they had a bunch of black widows. You go along and break those webs, you could tell what spider it was. You put something down there and pull that web out there, Other spiders looked exactly the same, just a random pattern. You go down there and you break that Black Widow web and you'd go crack. It's snapping like you break a small piece of thread. Snap. Things were strong. They're tough. Not only that, when these babies hatch out, they spend months in that nest. But after they hatch out, they want to leave the nest. They shoot out streamers of web. Picks up on the wind and starts blowing them. 15,000 feet in the air. 15,000 miles they travel. You got to be kidding. No. How do they know that wind's going to carry them anywhere? How do they know that wind is not just going to drop them 2 feet away? I guarantee you, when them things come in here, it was because God sent them for some reason. He said, well, I'm going to mess you guys all up over there. Why? Make it a little more real to us when you talk about it. Why? Because you've seen those things. Well, they got a pattern to them. Who teaches those spiders how to build that web? Who teaches those baby little things that are so small you can't hardly see them crawling around on the web? Okay, squirt out that web, now take off. I mean, don't you wish your kids would do that sometimes? Let's move along here. These things have a molting process. What's that? That's when they grow, their shell is really hard. It's like having a solid suit of armor around the outside of them. Well, how do they get out of it? Well, God had to make a provision for that. What'd he do? He made a molting factory that has a molting fluid that puts this fluid on the shell in the right place, in the right quantities, at the right time, so it dissolves the outside of that shell and that spider starts crawling out of that thing. Now, all that stuff is designed during the time that God says, let the earth bring forth the creeping thing. How fast can he work? Oh, my. We have no concept. We still underestimate him. And all these little tiny bits and pieces of almost insignificance that we're talking about, we're not even scratching the surface of what he does, even with that one little creature. I mean, there's so much more stuff going on inside of that thing than you and I have any idea of. He wraps that web up around that thing, you know, rolls it up. What's that? And that's like seal a meal. He puts that thing away for dinner for later on, man, leftovers. I mean, we're doing some of the similar kind of things. You know that stuff, that molting fluid, you know how important that is? You ever use boric acid to kill cockroaches? You know how they die? That's one of the cleanest insects on the earth, and when it walks through that boric acid, it starts cleaning itself back off. It don't like stuff on them. That's why they're always shiny and clean, because they are one of the cleaner insects. They can live in a nasty place, but they stay clean, kind of like Christians. You know, we live in a nasty world, but God fixed us to stay clean. And that thing, by trying to clean itself, it gets that boric acid inside of its mouth. Doesn't try to eat it. It just gets it in there cleaning itself off. That boric acid gets into that fluid in its body, and it's an acid, and it eats its way right through the shell. Next thing you know, the thing just leaks all out of its fluid, and he dies. See what would happen to that spider if that molting factory got out of control? Oh, man, we got a problem over here. That doesn't happen. Why? Because the same one that we sang about this morning that controls the wind, he controls more than the wind. You remember when he said, cast a net on the other side of the boat? Remember that? You think he controlled the fish? Let me tell you something. He controlled the fish all day not to get in those nets, too. You think it was just putting them in the nets? It ain't that way. I mean, the things that happen in our life, God ordains a lot of this stuff. You say, does he ordain everything? I mean, the stuff that we think is just by accident that's happening to us and it's just random patterns? I don't know. I mean, if I'm bought with a price and I'm worth that much to him and he says, you know, I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee, and it's he that worketh in me both the will and to do of his good pleasure, I have a tendency to think beyond just, oh, well, that one was you, God, but this one's not. I have a tendency to start thinking, this thing's not a matter of chance. This thing's a matter of God doing something. You say, what? I mean, I have to go with just about everything. I guarantee I'd rather say, he does everything in my life and try to see his hand in it and look for his will and accept his will than to just say, oh, well, once in a while he does. I think I'm a whole lot safer to look for God in everything than just say, oh, well, just the big ones. Let's close in prayer.